Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Mariana Velasquez Schmall. Mariana has devoted her life to helping young people realize their dreams. Over the years, she has mentored and guided young women and men through high school and into college. For her outstanding work in service to the people of Colorado's Roaring Fork Valley, the Glenwood Springs Chamber of Commerce honored her in 2011 with their Athena Award. Mariana was born Mariana Velasquez in the San Luis Valley 74 years ago. She was the youngest of 11 children in a family of farm workers. When she was a little girl, the family had to move to Windsor, Colorado to work in the beet fields.
I grew up in Windsor, Colorado, and since Windsor was mostly Russian and German, they weren't too happy to have anybody of color living in Windsor at the time.
Really?
Yeah.
What were your parents doing there?
There was a paradox about that, because being proud of who you are and then people telling you you're nothing but a dirty spick, you know, was very paradoxical for us. My father and mother are of Spanish descent. We did some 23andMe, and at the time when my mother was living, you know, we hadn't done that. But coming from a family of 11, we were curious, like, you know, what was that all about, when my mother said, "I'm really proud of who I am." So found out I am 54% Spanish.
Right.
My family came from the area of Madrid and Sevilla, Seville, and I am 32% Native American. I'm Navajo, and also a small percentage Pueblo Indian. My mother was Navajo, and my father was Pueblo Indian. And then the rest of that was, I have 10% Italian heritage in me and other European bloods. So I understand more now why my mother was really proud of that.
Right.
And as was my father. My great-great-grandparents had money and had land in the San Luis Valley, but my great-great-grandfather was a gambler.
Hmm.
And he sold off pieces of the land every time he lost
a
card game.
Till there wasn't anything left.
Till there was 20 acres left.
Oh.
And by that time, my mother and father had left the San Luis Valley when my mother was 17 and my dad was 24.
Hmm.
And so,
what caused them to leave and move to Windsor?
They left in search of work, because
there
was no work in the San Luis Valley. And so my father thought it would be a good idea to travel to California and work in the fields. And so my family grew up as migrants.
Hmm.
And
so did you follow your dad, or did you stay while he went?
When my parents first migrated out of the San Luis Valley to California, I wasn't even born yet. I'm one of 11. My oldest sister is going to be 91.
Wow.
So that tells you.
Yeah, that's some range.
Range. And I'm 74. So at that time, when they first left the San Luis Valley, I wasn't born. They did a lot of field work in California and Idaho, went to Idaho, picked potatoes, and then, of course, all the fruit crops in California. Eventually, my mother and father ended up in Colorado and in the Windsor, Severance, Eaton area. What brought them to that area was Great Western had several sugar beet plants right. in Colorado, and one of them was in that area. And so my family worked the sugar beet fields, and it was I was very fortunate in the sense that I didn't have to, but by the time I was growing up, most of my siblings had already married and moved away.
Well, and you had older siblings that could take care of you while your parents were in the fields, right?
Well, yes, but actually everybody went to the field.
Oh, so you were there.
As a baby, I was in the field, but I wasn't working the field because the way it worked in my family is you got paid by how many family members worked. And so all my siblings worked in the field.
And it was piecework a lot of times, right?
It was.
How much you brought in, how much you harvested.
It was hard work. It was, not only was it sugar beets, it was also cucumbers, or what we call pickles, because there was also a pickle dock in Windsor, Colorado. So that was hard work. I did a little bit of that just to make some money when I was young, but I didn't stick with it because it was really painful.
Yeah.
And hard work. So as a family, if you think about 10 kids
the unit,
out
yeah.
in the field, be hoeing beets, thinning beets, really hard work. And that went on till probably I was about 8, when I was 8. So the way the farmers paid you was they paid you once a year, and they paid
really?
You in the fall.
So you worked all that time, and they held your wages. I mean, what did you live on?
Whatever we could live on.
Right.
You know, in the winter, you save, you buy a bag of beans and rice.
Right.
And then you working out in the field, you can have access to some vegetables. And so that's primarily how my family survived. My father had my father was an alcoholic, and he would take the money in the fall and he would leave.
Oh man.
And
so just when things might look up, he left.
And then my mother, we survived then when that started to happen, when my father got really bad. We lived on government commodities.
Right.
Now people live on food stamps, but back then these big government trucks would come into town, semis, and they would bring all these government food commodities because the government would subsidize the farmers.
Right.
So in return, they would produce all this food.
Peanut butter in cans and cheese, dried milk.
Everything that, you know, you can think of. Spam in a can,
right.
A big can, not just a small can. And so...
What was that like for you?
It was really hard because we didn't have a car. We were poor. We were really poor. All my clothes were secondhand, or we bought clothes at a consignment store. We seldom ever had, new clothes. And then when the food commodity truck would come, my brother and I and my mother, one of my sisters, we'd have to walk over to the truck and stand in line and get our commodities and walk home. And I have to say, I was always very just embarrassed about that.
Yeah, I'm sure that it was done publicly so that, you know,
the
prejudice that was in the community was heightened when that happened.
Yeah.
That even though you were all doing backbreaking work in the fields, you know, you were somehow not entitled to a meal, basically.
No. I mean, once again, it was interesting. Windsor, growing up in Windsor was interesting because the first immigrants into that area were the Russians and Germans.
Right.
And they came because of the sugar beets. And then they bought the land. They bought land, started to build their farms, and they became the farmers. But when the Texans or the Tejanos came and the Mexicans came to work the fields along with my family, there was this prejudice attitude about people of color. It was all about the color of your skin.
Right, of course.
Yeah. And of course, now they were the wealthy farmers. We were the poor people. And so when I was 8, my older sisters had had enough of poverty and working so hard to have nothing. They asked my father to leave the house. And
wow, that must have been, that's a big deal. That must have caused quite...
It caused, yes. Well, we were living on a farm, and we had this farmer who was very nice to us and felt... matter of fact, he was the one who took my mother to the hospital when she went into labor with me.
Wow.
Because my mother didn't have transportation. My father...
He was gone.
He was gone. He hadn't come back yet from wherever he went. And so that farmer gave my family an ultimatum and said, if Joe comes back, you're all going to have to leave because this isn't fair to you. And but if you want to stay on this farm and continue to work and go to school and work, then you can do that. But Joe's not welcome back. And so my family made that decision. So when my father came back, farmer was there, and my family was there, and they told him, you're not welcome here anymore. But it was, as difficult as that was, we were already taking care of ourselves. My sisters were already working hard, working in the fields. They really didn't need my father.
Well, it must have been so hard for you to live your life without him, and then he comes back and he expects to just be treated like head of household.
And I was 8, so I was pretty young. I remember my father, but I don't remember him well.
So he left, your father left the house, but he was still around?
He left. We don't know where he would go to. We think he would go into like Mexico, Juarez, and that area.
Right.
He went to the sun. We stayed
in the cold. But when he was asked to leave the house, did he leave the town as well?
He didn't leave the town. I saw my father growing up, but he was very angry at us and didn't want to have really anything to do with us. He actually blamed his family for that we kicked him out.
That he hadn't done anything that...
Yeah,
deserving
his alcoholism and him taking the money. Remember, he would take the money.
Exactly.
The farmer paid my father, and he would leave. You know, maybe he just didn't want to deal with the fact that he had a problem and left us with a bigger problem. But we were resilient. I mean, we knew hardship, but we all had to work in the summer, and we all had to work after school or do whatever we could. But we all managed to graduate from high school, and I have several siblings who have degrees, and some were teachers. I think really what helped us was my mother was a devout Catholic. And we went to church quite a bit. But the church also really helped us, not just by giving us maybe food or telling us where we could get some clothes, but giving us a moral compass.
Right.
Because we really didn't have a father growing up. And my mother was, my mother wasn't a disciplinarian person. That wasn't her nature. She told us to behave and, you know, all of that. But she never physically hit us or we just had to figure out how to survive and how to not only survive, but how could we bring in money to help my mother? Because by the time I was 12, my mother was no longer able to work in the fields. I mean, 11 kids laboring in the field, yes, all summer. Yeah. Her body was spent in that sense.
And being poor.
So by the time we were old enough to get a job, we were the ones who helped pay the rent. We were renting. We never owned a house. And if we wanted a telephone, we all had to chip in and pay for the phone. We didn't have any other amenities. We didn't have a car. We couldn't afford a car, so we walked everywhere. We didn't have a bus system.
In a way, it was communal. I mean, you were all seen as more members of this community, this commune, you know, that, yeah, your mother wasn't a disciplinarian, your father wasn't there, but you were all working, trying to make enough money to hold the
whole family,
together.
And then, you know, my older sisters married, moved away, but always they always financially helped in some way. When my sister Eva, who lives here in Denver, married, and they had financial success. The last house we rented, I was living there with my mom. My brother Louis ended up going into the service and into Vietnam, and so she was able to buy the house, the last house we lived in, and that made my mother really happy.
Yeah, that was
she finally had a house of her own. So I really know how it's like to live. People don't really understand when they talk about immigrants, you know, how difficult it is to want to have success, to want to have happiness, but how hard it is to attain that.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Mariana Velasquez Schmall was born Mariana Velasquez, the youngest of 11 children. When she graduated from high school, Mariana did what many daughters of poor families had to do. She went to work and took care of her mother. She found a job at the Migrant Council working with young children and eventually moved to Greeley, where she was hired by Weld County's District Attorney's Office to help set up trials for attorneys and state patrol officers. By the time she moved to Glenwood Springs, she was married and had two sons. And in Glenwood Springs, Garfield County's District Attorney's Office hired her to work with victims of domestic violence. That experience prompted her to join with other concerned citizens in Garfield County to establish the Advocate Safe House Project, a program offering comprehensive services to domestic violence survivors and their children. In 1993, while Maria was on the board, the group was able to purchase the project's first safe house. In 1995, Colorado Mountain College hired Mariana to work with families with college-age children who had never had the opportunity to send their kids to college. One of the first people she went to see in her new role was Bob Young, the president and founder of Alpine Bank. Bob died in December of 2025, leaving a legacy of generosity and philanthropy. Part of his legacy was Alpine Bank's Hispanic Scholarship, which he launched in 1996. Mariana, through her new role with Colorado Mountain College, was able to help him grow it.
People don't know how wonderful Bob was. I mean, he treated me, he was a friend, but he was also a mentor. He treated me with such respect that, you know, he helped me plant a lot of seeds because he gave, you know, he started the, what was at the time, the Alpine Bank Hispanic Scholarship. And I had the opportunity to grow that scholarship. And
describe what it was. The scholarship, he gave a scholarship to...
He gave a scholarship to a high school graduating senior at the 12, in the 12 counties that CMC
covered,
served.
That Colorado Mountain College covered, right.
And what I would do is I created the scholarship and worked with Bob in Alpine Bank and the bankers of every one of those communities. We would interview the students, and we would select the students. And we selected them not just on merit, who they were, and nothing to do with their background. What do you want to contribute to your community? What do you want to do with your life?
What are your dreams?
What are your dreams? If we give you this scholarship, and yes, they wanted to go to college. They wanted to help their families. They wanted to make a difference. And that's what the scholarship was about. And since I knew how hard it was for students, so my mother needed me to work. I needed me to work to survive. Parents were reluctant for their son or daughter to go to college because that was an income. Who's gonna bring in that money?
Right.
And my job was to go into the home and try to convince the parents that the student who got the scholarship, try to convince the parents that in the long run, financially, they would be better off.
And that's a hard sell.
And that was a hard sell.
Because you're asking the family to give up part of their income, which they desperately need, on the chance, on the dream, that someday your son or daughter will be able to help contribute to the family in a way that would be much better than what's going on now.
It was hard for them to understand why was someone going to give their son or daughter a scholarship. You got to remember, these are immigrants. These are hardworking immigrants. Someone's going to give them, their son or daughter, a full ride scholarship to CMC.
Well, imagine if they'd come with that story to your family way back when. You'd go, there's something wrong with this.
What do they want from me? What kind of labor do I have to?
This can't be possible.
This can't be possible. But gradually we built that scholarship, and the success of the students meant more success for the future students. And as more students graduated from CMC, went off to pursue their undergraduate degree, families started to see, yes, this is making a difference and can make a difference.
But you were on the ground. You were out there knocking on doors. You made that happen in a way that it wouldn't have without you.
We knew the success rate of minority students going off to college was not good. And if the family didn't support a student, how were they going to succeed? So I felt it was very important to bring the family along with the students' education, their success, make it a whole unit again, like when I was growing up.
Right, that you have to keep that unit together for the student to be successful.
Right.
Because if you don't have the family, it's all going to fall apart.
And at the beginning, You know, it took a while and it kind of fell apart. But like I said, you know, we started creating more success stories. Like Escar Costa is, he was one of our first scholars, and he is, he works for Alpine Bank in Eagle, and he has been very successful within Alpine Bank. Bob was really proud of him and Yesenia. I mean, Yesenia was one of the students when I went to visit her family. Her father was not happy that she was going to go to college. He really didn't understand someone giving her a scholarship. It took some convincing.
I bet it did.
And it took, Yesenia had to really convince her parents, if I had this opportunity, I could be successful.
And you and your work to go out into the community and bridge that gap.
I think it's important in some way in your life to serve others. I think the joy that's come to me in helping others has been such a gift to myself and to others, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's made me appreciate all the people that has touched my life, who's helped mold who I am today.
That was Mariana Velasquez Schmall. In addition to her work with high school juniors and seniors, Mariana developed First Ascent, a 5-day summer outdoor leadership program for 8th and 9th graders. And the Yesenia mentioned in the program is Yesenia Silva Estrada. She's Vice President of Planning and Chief of Staff at Colorado Mountain College. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on immigrant stories, you can go to immigrantstories.net, or you can find us as an Apple podcast, or you can also go to kdnk.org. Thanks for listening.